careless, mocking, forceful. That's how wisdom wants us, because she is a woman who saves her love only for the warrior. The priestly type are the most powerful people in society because they control the categories of the mind. But these priestly types do not present themselves in religious garb. Instead, they call themselves experts and academics. But they act just the way the old priests used to. They tell us that they are the wise ones. They are the ones who know, and we are the ones who must obey. In the West, we had great revolutions to free ourselves from the priests. But it did not take long for a new set of Brahmins to co-opt science and turn it into a religion. And you were timid enough to fall for their ruse. As long as they chant the right buzzwords, you will believe anything they say. You are as superstitious as an old Christian mindlessly submitting to their priest. And this has led to what many people are noticing and have noticed. You cannot free mankind. The masses are petty and foolish. You can revolutionize the whole world to try free them, but in the end, they will be ruled by a new set of priests. And worse still, the masses are completely unconscious of this. They can't see how somebody like Edward Bernays, or a communist Bolshevik, would bullshit them with beautiful lies while secretly exploiting them. They cannot see how just a few bribes would be enough to tempt some lab coat scientists to distort evidence. And this fact has been well known for thousands of years. And we moderns, in our lack of sophistication, have decided we wish to rediscover old mistakes. Plato, right at the beginning of Western philosophy, spoke about the allegory of the cave. And this is how the story goes. The masses do not live in reality. They are trapped in a cave, a matrix that has been constructed around them. And all their beliefs, all the ideas that model their world, have been projected into their brains by hidden priests who live in the shadows. And some of us become aware of these priests, and we turn and we explore, where are these projections coming from? And behind the priests, we discover that there is a passage of light. And we follow that path out into the real world, where we break free from the matrix and see reality as it is. And perhaps we would go back into the cave, and we would say to the people, "Don't you understand? You are living in a delusion." But the people will hate us. The people will attack us. The guardians will morph the delusions of the many to make us seem like demons. So Plato realized that those who were smart enough to wake up and see reality as it is were not at war with the masses, but with the priests who were manipulating them. Evil priests are like a parasite that latches onto a people and begins to exploit them and distort their minds like schizophrenia, like a psychosis of death. Nothing is more destructive than malevolent priests seizing the mind of the many. And so Plato said that those of us who are woke have a very serious task. Decrepit priests are always going to try to slink their way in and bewitch the masses. And so we must stop them. Let's talk about the red pill. Let's talk about the matrix. Let's talk about the nature of your life and how you've grown up within a lie. The whole premise of society, which is what the matrix is that it's designed to control your mind with stories. It tells you that you live in this democratic society of equality, and it tells you, it gives you a life path. It says that the most noble thing that you can do is go to school and stay in your lane and get a job and go drink and watch sports and then pay taxes. And that's just the life that you're going to get. And then, you know, have 1.5 kids and all this type of stuff. And this is going to be the good life. This is something that you can do that is noble and supports the world and all that type of stuff. But really, that's a lie. That's a lie to keep you a slave, keep you stuck in the lane. And through these various institutions, through sales taxes, VAT, through student loans, taking out your mortgage on based on usury and all these type of things, interest-based loans, through your taxes itself, all your energy is harvested through money. You are a battery inside of a machine, inside of a matrix. The system is designed to extract your life force out of you through the financial system. And of course, now they're fucking you over with inflation and all this type of stuff. So they're extracting more money and there's nothing you can do about it. And all this life force is harvested up into this secret cabal of people called the elite, called the 1%, called the shadow government. And nobody quite knows who these people are. This is a vague category in our inside of our heads. We know this money's going somewhere. We know it might be going to the bankers or the Illuminati or the Zionists or the Nazis who live on the moon, as I'm hearing nowadays, stuff like this. It could be anybody, or they live on Mars. Sorry, they live on Mars. I got the story wrong. Or they live in Antarctica. I don't know. But there's these people who are doing this, these high magicians, these shadow people that are extracting everything. And your problem is that you need to wake up from this. This is the real red pill, is that you're inside Plato's cave, and there's some of us, like Steph, like various people who are reaching out and saying, please, you degenerate, fallen normie, you sheep, you person full of slave morality, talking about, like, oh, I don't know, individuation and all this type of stuff. You are a slave. You are trapped within this system. I'm trying to bring you out of this and into reality. I'm trying to wake you up. I'm trying to bring this away from you and take you out of the harvesting, grinding, mincemeat machine and show you the light, show you the joy of life that can be achieved if you can just break free from that. This is the myth, this is the story of the age. And this is what I want to talk to you about, what it means to break out of Plato's cave. How do you escape this scam, this system that you're put, that is oppressing you, and how do you understand how it works? So today we're going to talk about the Matrix and how you can comprehend this in your mind and use it to take the first steps to set yourself free. The Matrix is built out of stories. Stories are the ultimate tool to wield power. And if you are to understand this, you need to realize how stories are connected to human decisions. Because the way you think is in narratives, and narratives have this effect on how you make choices and how you take actions. To give you a very, very simple example, a while ago, I think it was in the 60s or 70s, people started to notice that all the people dying of heart disease, when they cut them open, they take a look at their hearts, they would always see that their arteries are clogged with cholesterol. And they would start to say, obviously, the cholesterol is bad. Cholesterol is probably causing heart disease. They just sort of jump to this conclusion. I don't think it was necessarily malicious. It was just the scientist observing something and putting together a narrative that was probably not fully correct, but it was close enough for them to make a suggestion. And so what they did is they started to promote this narrative that, well, obviously, your arteries are full of cholesterol. That seems to be the thing that's causing the leading cause of death, which is heart disease. Cholesterol is bad. And the reason why there's cholesterol in your arteries is because you're eating cholesterol. You know, if you eat cholesterol, it's going to go into your blood. This is how food works. It gets into your blood. And that's obviously what's clogging your arteries. So if you want to stop having heart disease, stop eating so much meat. Stop eating so many things full of cholesterol, because cholesterol is only in animal foods. There's no cholesterol in plant foods. And so they run with this story. They say, imagine when you eat that cheese or eat that full fat milk or eat that steak or something like this, that cholesterol goes into your body and it starts clogging your arteries. And this image gets burned into people's minds and it becomes a very simple idea. And it's a very simple narrative. And it appears a thousand different ways in people's lives and they don't quite inspect it or understand it. It just flashes into their heads. They get these images flashed into their heads and it gets backed up by the idea that scientists are figuring this out. But most importantly, this story instantiates itself in people's minds and then people begin to make decisions based on it. They get guided towards choices. They start to make some very interesting choices. They start to eat low fat diets. They start to avoid very fatty foods. They start to avoid animal foods. This becomes a predicate for many of the vegan and vegetarian diets that you're seeing nowadays, and many of those trends. They move away from cooking foods in butter and beef tallow, which is beef fat. They move towards cooking things in sunflower oil, canola oil, various oils like this, seed oils as we call them. Now, a lot of people would think this is quite innocuous. It's better safe than sorry. What's wrong with cutting out a bit of fat from your diet? It's not going to kill you. You know, it's absolutely fine. It's probably better for your health anyway to cut down on this excessive stuff. Oh, well, I'm just listening to the sciences. You know, all these type of things. People make all these suggestions. But there's a very fascinating problem where normal people can't correctly connect the chains of cause and effect. They don't have the IQ to do this stuff. So this little narrative that they got introduced in their lives very, very slowly or a couple of times that took root and led to them making big, big decisions about their life may lead to pretty profound effects, but they can't draw the correlation properly. They can't see the chain of causation between them all. And this would be If you understand how cholesterol works, you understand how key it is towards your health. So for example, your steroid hormones are made up of cholesterol. Testosterone has this lump of cholesterol at the bottom, basically, and then it has all these squiggly things sticking out of it. And this is usually a good sign that something biochemically is very, very much related. So it seems like all our hormones, all our steroid hormones at least, are made of cholesterol. Cholesterol seems to be a key component in it. And many people would know that if you want to increase your testosterone and various things, it's actually a very, very good idea to eat a larger amount of cholesterol than usual, because you give your body an abundance of raw materials to start producing these things that we want. You know, high cholesterol diets are usually like very high in eggs and stuff like this. Now, this is a very interesting thing to think about, because imagine if you start cutting out cholesterol, does that mean that your body might be struggling to get the raw materials to produce as much steroid hormones? And what happens with your hormones? Well, your hormones are connected to things like your well-being, connected to things like how good your sex life is, how strong and muscular you can get. It actually changes your behavior. You might think that you're an angelic being. You might think that all your problems are spiritual. You just got to read a bit more Jung. You've got to do a bit more archetype Pokemon or something like this. But actually, you're an awful lot more of a physical being than you think. And so your hormones are the programming tools of your body in order to give you physical experiences. High amounts of testosterone will make you more clear-headed. You literally think clearer. It'll make you more decisive. It'll make you more assertive. It'll make you more actually better able to bond with people. People have found these really fascinating studies and whatnot. So it has a huge effect on what's going on, and it's not just testosterone. There's many others as well. All women will know that getting a good supply of healthy fats are very important for them to regulate their hormones and make everything work out properly. And then, of course, there's all these other things. Your skin requires an awful lot of high fat. Cholesterol is quite good for your skin in many ways. Cholesterol and saturated fat is very heavily related with cholesterol. It's actually really anti-inflammatory. Now it turns out that these seed oils are actually very inflammatory. They're full of polyunsaturated fats, all these technical details that might bore you. But the point being is that when you have an awful lot of them, it causes inflammation, which actually might slow your metabolism down, which actually might cause you to, ironically, start to put on weight and stuff like this. And what we've seen in the last couple of years, decades, is that people, despite the fact that we're cutting out all these high-fat foods, people are actually getting fatter. People are getting fatter, they're getting more diabetes, and things like heart disease are actually going up. And people are becoming weaker and uglier. Their hormones are getting fucked. You all know about the idea of testosterone falling down. And one very, very simple narrative might be a huge contributor towards this, and this is the cholesterol problem. And you can end up in this situation where you're a sickly blob. You're sitting there, you're chubby, you're unhappy with yourself, you're in a constant state of depression because you're in a low level of inflammation at all times, and you have no idea that it was this story that was fed into you in the matrix that is causing all this. And you might pick up wrong narratives. You might pick up wrong stories. You might think that, oh, well, the reason why I feel this way, the reason why I'm depressed, is because I have a disease called depression, and I was genetically born with this. Now, this has actually just recently been disproved with loads of scientific study that has said, no, that's not true at all. But people believed this for a long time. People were saying, no, I'm born with depression. It's a genetic thing built inside my brain. And maybe some people might say, well, you know, maybe I have depression, but the thing that I need to do to get out of it is to do some type of verbal jujitsu with my mind and think my way out of it or something like this. When in reality, what you probably need to do is just to pull out an awful lot of these pro-inflammatory foods and start to go back to eating healthy foods that supply you with strength and vitality, foods that fill you full of androgenic hormones and whatnot. And this is a very fascinating thing, because one narrative has now led to you being depressed. It has now ruined your life. A tiny little innocent narrative has led to you being in a terrible situation. This is the power that stories have on your life. The stories dictate decisions. Now, what you should notice is that if you are the person who can control the stories that are getting disseminated into the population, you can control the decisions of the population. You need to understand that chain of cause and effect. And power is not centralized in some type of evil soldier or some type of psychotic general, but the true possessor of power is the person who can decide how information is spread into people's brains. The people in charge of the education system, the people in charge of any
any institution that has the capacity to influence people's minds. For example, a social media company is perfectly categorically correct to call one of these things. An awful lot of people say stuff like, all right, blah, 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 social media is an exception and all this. It's new and people don't know how to understand it, but it is an information dissemination tool. And so it has the power to control what information people get inside of their heads and therefore what narratives are expressed within their brains and therefore the decisions of the masses. The information controls choices. You have to understand that. And so power is the ability to decide which narratives get pushed and which narratives do not. And of course, this is something that's quite binary. It doesn't matter if these narratives are true or false. Whoever gets into the position of power will be able to push whatever narratives they see fit, whatever they want. They might not like you. They might want to exploit you. And they could go up there to the top of society and they could push all these narratives that will make you sick, that will make you sterile, that will make you jaded, that will make you depressed, that will eradicate your masculinity, that will lower your testosterone. They might be saying, you know what? Let's just fucking fill them full of seed oils. Let's just go and just get IVs and have them all chugged up on seed oils. Let's just make them guzzle the seed oils down. Maybe they're saying stuff like that. They could be. And there's nothing you could do about it, because if they wanted to, they could just pump that stuff out there and brainwash the masses and brainwash all the restaurant owners and all the doctors and all the pharmaceutical companies. They could do all that stuff. And then you would have to just fucking go along and deal with it. And every time you go out for food, you'll just be getting seed oils lathered all over your burger, all over your steak. People just dumping seed oils on top of it. And you would get inflamed and you would get depressed. And you would end up this cuckolded slave within the matrix with all this inflammation. You can't think, your pineal gland calcifying over. You're going blind in the spiritual astral plane. You can't see the things that I can see. You can't see the fifth dimension like me, and I can see these archons exploiting you from the other dimensions. I can see these creepy golems, these spindly machina fingers coming down and suckling out your astral spirit because they're feeding you seed oils. You can't see that stuff, but I can, because I don't eat them, because I've cleansed myself, because I've broken through the haze of inflammation and absolutely liberated myself. They could do that, and there'd be nobody capable of stopping them, because they're in the position of power, because they're the people who control the narrative. And you would then notice that that is the biggest question of all. Who gets to decide who gets to control the narratives? And how do we know that the people controlling the narratives are good? Because if you could imagine that there could be people up there telling evil stories, telling stories designed to make you sick, make you feel bad, make you feel depressed, there should also be the possibility of getting people up there, getting priests up there, white magicians up there, druids, high priests, true priests who believed in the soul of the people, Brahmins with good hearts, experts with good intentions, who could get up there and promote something in the opposite direction. They could promote maximum health. They could promote vitality. They could go out and they could tell you how to eat cholesterol in an intelligent way. They could say stuff to you like, okay, for example, don't allow yourself to eat cholesterol and get inflamed at the same time, because then your body will store it in your arteries. Instead, make sure that you're in a low inflammation state by avoiding these bad things, by taking in lifestyle factors into account, and then only eating cholesterol when you're in a good state, so therefore your body utilizes it properly. Because your body takes something like cholesterol and it says to itself, am I in a stress state, and am I going to turn this cholesterol into cortisol, or am I going to turn it into testosterone? I'm going to turn it into a growth androgen, or I'm going to turn it into a stress tool of some sort. And this is what you would begin to understand. And this is how you could begin to conceptualize the idea of a better set of people in power, a set of people who promote narratives that are vital and life-giving. And this would be something that would benefit you. This would be what it would mean to be a part of a society that would not be so negative, that people would not have this fear of, this paranoia about, because they would see themselves as becoming healthy, becoming successful, becoming full of life, becoming fertile, becoming an affirmative of the life around them, as opposed to negative, paranoid, sickly, depressed, becoming weaker and uglier. This is the core battle that you see going on right now. Plato spoke in his Republic about an ideal way of setting up society. And it begins with a first principle. It begins with the realization that there's always going to be a caste system. There's always going to be a structure and a hierarchy of class. There's always going to be a working class, a bulk of people who are going to do things like trades, who are going to do things like operations. And there's always going to be a set of people who are essentially rulers. These might be kings, they might be warriors, they might be politicians. These will be people who are running operations. They're like a managerial and the arms and the wings and the enforcement arm of the of this society. And then on top of them, there's always this space for the masters of the categories, the masters of the stories, the masters of the conceptual part of the mind. Because these are the people who possess the highest power, and their responsibility is therefore the highest. Because if they instantiate and create a set of categories and a set of narratives that are health-giving, that are life-giving, that make people feel vital and happy and full of energy, then they will have a successful society. But if these people screw up and get the wrong categories inside of their heads and they make the wrong decisions and put out the wrong narratives, then society will become sick, it will become decadent, it will become fallen apart. And these people are the higher authority than even the warriors, because the warriors are like the crusaders of the Middle Ages. They are powerful, they are strong, but they can't think outside of the worldview of the priests. The warriors would struggle to express their violence and their strength because they're trapped within the story of Christianity, and they can't, you know, go around just beating up random people. So they need to have an outlet for it. And what the priests would do is almost like they were dangling a carrot over the noses of the Middle Ages knights. They would say to them, well, those Muslims out there in the Middle East, those are these evil people. These are the devils that are coming up to try to take Christendom down. So you can go crusade down there and release your violent, powerful instincts upon them and attack them and do what we want you to do. And this is very fascinating, because the priests, by controlling narratives, by controlling categories, by dangling carrots in front of the warriors, are able to direct them whatever direction that they want them to go. They control them almost like magic. Without having to do any of the fighting themselves, they can send these titanic, Teutonic warriors down from Germany all the way into the Levant in order to fight against the Saracens and the various people. And you see this, for example, in the modern world in a very similar way. Remember the weapons of mass destruction thing that was going on? That narrative that popped up was a very emotional narrative, and an awful lot of people, you know, joined the army in order to fight against those people who are trying to destroy America and destroy the West and all that, to try get after terrorists. You don't hear about terrorists that much anymore, but that was a big thing back then. And this motivated an awful lot of people to crusade into the Middle East yet again. Why do we love doing that? I don't know. But it turned out that that was all bogus. There was no weapons of mass destruction, as everybody ended up finding out. And of course, that was all just narratives. It was all just a spin in order to get people to take action, in order to get young guys to go and get their legs blown off, to kill brown people who were stuck inside mud huts. This isn't exactly, you know, the most noble thing when you look at it on its surface. But the people who were thinking of these conceptions, this idea of weapons of mass destruction, this narrative that would motivate people to make these decisions, to put their lives on the line, to express their warrior instincts, would achieve great power. They can essentially control a mass army. They can control the most violent force that has ever existed, which is the American army, through the mastery of categories, and they don't have to do any fighting at all. Now, that is real power. That is very sophisticated thinking. That's very intelligent of them to get themselves in that position and figure out how to leverage that power, because they now control something incredible. And this is always how power has worked. This is the nature of power. Power is directly related to psychology. It is the most sophisticated application of psychology of all. It's about understanding how narratives and categories control our decisions, as I said, and in getting yourself in a position where you can disseminate those decisions, because then you can wield the entirety of society like you're a brain controlling a body. A small group of priests sit up there inside of the head, and they move the arms around, and they punch things, and they do all these type of operations, and they make the bodies make decisions. And the body has no will. The body is unconscious. The body can't really think for itself, per se, because the priests are in control. The mind and the nervous system is in control. And through the evolution, so what Plato says is that the general archetype that's going to appear is some type of hierarchy, some type of pyramid, and there will be this brain at the top, these priests, and there will be this arms, these violent forces, and then there will be the working class underneath this, and all of these things need to work together. And ideally, you would get in place philosopher kings, good people who run the society properly and lead it towards health. But of course, bad people could get into power quite easily and screw everything up. He talks about that as well. And what you see all throughout history is this manifestation constantly appear. Over in India, you had the Brahmins up at the top, who were the people who controlled the Hindu religion, and they were the ones who picked the kings. And then beneath them, you had the kings, and you had the various people who gained sort of explicit power, and these were the warrior castes, and then beneath them you have, of course, the working class, and then you have like the untouchables and the sudgers and all this stuff. And it's the same pattern, the same archetype, the caste system that reappears in medieval Europe. This is what Christianity was. It was the Catholic priest who in Rome had all the power, and then beneath them they had the royal aristocracy and the kings, and then underneath that you had the peasants. The peasantry were the people, just the people basically. And this is shown up in the modern world just the same. Who's at the top? We don't know. Is it the New World Order? Is it the scientists, the Zionists, the Nazis on Mars? It's hard to know, but it's the people. Maybe it's just a load of dork intellectuals, a load of dork experts like Sam Harris just screwing up the job or something like that. But these people sit in the realm of category control. These are the people who sat down and say, what are the concepts and the narratives that we're going to introduce into the mind of the population? How are we going to show the population stories that change the way that they think? And this is a big question, because we're currently in what a lot of people are saying is a culture war, where people are making all these radical new decisions over the last couple of decades. They're changing their lives in a way that has not been seen compared to tradition. And of course, many of those choices have been built upon the predicates of narratives. And we're going to talk about that stuff later. Like, why do people watch porn so much nowadays is a good question. Why do European people hate themselves so much? These type of questions are very fascinating. What are the narratives to support this? Why do people eat paint thinner? That's what seed oils actually are. Why are people eating that stuff? Well, of course, it's the things like the cholesterol narrative. These are all fascinating mistakes. And then beneath this strange category caste, this hidden archonic elite, we have, of course, the politicians and the bankers, the people who show explicit force and power, maybe even the celebrities might be them. These are like the aristocracy or something like this, the entertainers who bewitch the masses. And beneath them, you have the laborers. You have the people within the matrix, the working caste, the tax slaves, the wage cooks, the slave boys, those type of things. And this is, again, that same archetype of the people who are peasants, the people who are plebs, the people who are ruled and led. They are put to work, and these parasitic elites live off them in that regard. Now, I want to talk to you about how these hierarchies form, because it's very fascinating to think about this. It's very fascinating to understand the logistics and structure of power. Think about Christianity in Rome, because that was one of the first examples of one of the most sophisticated manifestations of this type of Brahmin power I've ever seen. The one of the great matrixes that were made, because every time someone can, the world is almost like a set of cells, and if someone can just claim them for themselves, they can gain immense amount of power. So you had in Europe this decentralized, disorganized pagan life religion, where people were running around worshipping trees. They had all the old stories of Greek mythology, Roman mythology, the Hellenic mythologies. You had the Celts, you had the Germans. There was people, you know, and it was very decentralized. There was magic trees, there was magic spots, there was magic temples. There was a sort of organized religion there, and it would have had many of these attributes where there would have been druids who were deciding the stories that are permitted in society. It would have been there just like anything else, but it was a little bit more disorganized. Now, what happened in Rome is mind-blowing when you begin to understand it, because Rome had the most, you know, muscularly powerful civilization that the world has ever seen, the Roman Empire, and it was, you know, through the Martian army that they gained all their control. But of course, Rome fell, and even though Rome fell, what was born out of Rome was something far more sophisticated than what came before, because the Roman army was a great source of power, but it was nothing compared to the Roman church. Because when Rome fell, all that was really left was this little church full of these priests, full of these guys who just had this magic book, and they had this story. And this story was, of course, the story of Christ. And Rome, despite the fact that it lost its army and it was invaded by Germans, still managed to do something incredible, where just like the Germans are the warrior caste, they became the kings. These Goths ran into Europe and became the royal aristocracy for the next 2,000 years. But the Roman church managed to worm its way into all its societies. All of these priests were Christian. All of these kings were Christian. They were all underneath the guise of Catholicism, which means universalism. And the Roman church was almost like the brain at the center, where you had these high priests and these dendrils, this nervous system began to spread itself out all across Europe, almost like these dendrils were like an octopus pulling in all these cells to create this new body that had not existed before. All the way up to Ireland, you had the wirings going all the way up there, and then all the way down into Spain, across over up into Poland, and even Sweden and all that, all the way down into Italy and all across the world like this. And this is very fascinating and powerful, because this acts literally like a nervous system. All these little churches become these neurons, these nodes, and these neurons and these nodes are disseminators of narratives and information into the body, into the cell. So up in Ireland, where I'm from, you would be, you know, getting up in the middle of your day, going to drink a load of milk, and then you'd go down to the local church. And this local church has been connected somehow all the way back to the Roman Empire, to this group of bishops and this pope at the very, very top of it, all the way back there. And when the pope makes a decision, it disseminates through letters all the way out through the Catholic Church. And then, amazingly, your Irish priest up there in the very far north of Donegal or something like that is kind of coming out and telling you, and this new narrative that has been disseminated out from something like the Pope, and you're hearing stories from all across. And maybe he might say, like, all right, the Pope has announced the crusade, and this has been written and disseminated out to all the priests, and we're now going to tell them. And so all the young guys from Donegal would run down to Dublin and then ship over to mainstream Europe and then go into join a crusade or something to this. It's very, very fascinating, because this nervous system pulled organizational capacity and created in Europe this consciousness, this entity, this living entity that was controlled by this one brain, which is the church, which we now call Christendom. And the Europeans understood themselves as Christians. And all the kings and all that were underneath this umbrella power, this more sophisticated power. And it was the narrative of Christianity that operated this. And this absolutely annihilated paganism. Pagan culture in Europe was wiped off the map, because it did not have the sophisticated power in order to compete against this. These dendrils, this new nervous system, was more powerful than that. And it was wiped off the map. That was cooked. All your trees were cut down. They ran in, they cut them down. They're like, fuck you and your stupid trees. You're not worshiping rivers anymore. You're doing what we say now. And for 600, 700 years, the Catholic Church main priority was to claim as much European land as possible to create this sophisticated force, this sophisticated infrastructure, this body that the brain could then utilize. Now, of course, what began to happen over the course of many centuries is that Christianity, this nervous system, lost power, because this nervous system was built upon the infrastructure of the church, and the infrastructure of the church was based on the only way that you could make information, because information is the tool here. Stories are transmitted via information. The only way you could create information is by a monk writing it out, a scribe writing it out. So this is very much tied to this infrastructure. The fact that the people who controlled the language was the church itself. The monasteries and the scribes and the priests were the people who could write, and they could control language, and this type of infrastructure is how it worked. And therefore, to create like a book or a story or something like that, it was very expensive, very, very costly. And so if you were to send a message from the Pope all the way down to Ireland, it's going to take a while for monks and all that to do that stuff, and so the monks possess all the means. But then what began to happen is you began to get the printing press. You began to see, about 400 years ago, the advent of new logistical technology, new infrastructure, new ways to transmit information. Information became democratic. It became an awful lot more rapid. And this is probably the most significant thing that began to erode the organizational force of the church. And a new force began to rise. And this force was not as explicit. It didn't come announcing itself as Christianity. It came very much the way that modern power works. It was sort of quiet. It was subtle. It may be even hidden in the shadows. But this was the printing press, which basically evolved then into the media and television, and now presents itself to us as the complex of social media, television, and the press. All of these things are sort of wrapped up together as this new infrastructure, this new information dissemination. And this is more powerful than the church. The modern secular state media and the state education and the various private companies tagged and associated with this stuff has far more ability to disseminate information than the church, and it can therefore subvert the church. And this is why all of us grow up thinking the church is a boomer operation that is very evil and full of evil people, and that it was oppressive and totalitarian, because its greatest competitor, the media, is obviously going to slander it this way. Just like the church had this habit of slandering the native pagans of Europe, even though that, you know, you've got many credit to the pagans that they did some incredible things. They had some incredible perspectives and worldview as a vital health religion. Of course, the church is going to have to demonize them the most because they're the main enemy. They're the main competitor. And now you see the same thing happening. You see this Antichrist, New World Order media show up, and it does that same thing. It tries to push out its old sterile competitor. It makes it sound uncool. Oh, the stupid, codgy, you know, church, it's boring, who goes to church anymore, all these type of things. It pulls people out of that nervous system, and it's almost like a new nervous system is now wiring itself in, and it does it in a sophisticated way. First, it starts off with books and education systems, where you're forced to read books in the education system. Very interesting when you think about that. And then what happens is you start to see television show up, and televisions are so much more sophisticated than even the church itself, because the television, the church is something that you have to go through every single Sunday. You know, you go to church, and then you get the brainwashing, you get the information, you get the neuron flashes it into the cell, into you, and you go and think about these stories, and it leads to the decisions that you're going to make for your life. But now it's even more sophisticated, because you go home from work and you sit down and you flick on the TV, and people watch the TV for a couple of hours every night. And even now with this, this is getting more intense. This is showing up right in front of our faces now. We're plugging the neuron into our eyes all the time. And maybe Neuralink's going to come on, and then the neuron will literally be in our neurons. There will be no separation anymore. It will not be as old and todgy as it used to be. Now it will be completely integrated into man's brain. And then all of a sudden, you will have direct information transmission into the mind of the masses. Now that's a very sophisticated idea. Imagine the level of power that people could achieve if they were able to get everybody to plug in the chip, plug in the neuron, plug in the zombie chip, and then they could then disseminate the information as they so wish. They could put any story inside your head and you would have no resistance to it, because you were a normie. You were destined to be trapped in the matrix. You can't see in a meta perspective and see beyond these type of things. You are destined to be a slave, and you should be very afraid of what might happen if the wrong people were able to get the Neuralink inside your head and start to brainwash you, to eat seed oils, to guzzle down anti-cholesterol drugs, to guzzle down seed oils and become all inflamed and fat, turn you into a tub, turn you into the last man, turn you into the pod man, where they put a headset on your head and they brainwash you forever, sticking you inside a VR porn room while they extract the electricity out of your heartbeat and turn you into a battery for the New World Order's matrix. Now, with all this sophisticated thinking, you can begin to understand the nature of the matrix. The matrix is a machine, because power goes to those who can control and disseminate narratives. The pagans lost against the church because the pagans did not have the infrastructure to promulgate their visions and their ideas. Therefore, their visions and their ideas were obscured. They were categorized as pagan, which basically is like calling people rednecks. It actually means the same thing. And pushed out of the realm of history and ostracized and used as a slander laugh word. And now these religions are not taken serious. They're seen as dead religions and just LARPs. The Catholics defeated them absolutely. Now, what's happening currently is a very similar thing. This new infrastructure is seeping its way in, and it's more sophisticated than the churches of old. And it's having incredible power of taking over people's minds. It's forming a matrix around people's minds. This is part of the matrix, because this is one of the tentacles of the matrix. This is something that gets narratives into your head, gets information into your head, and there's all sorts of these things in your life. And then the actual narratives themselves are extremely important as well. And you are always going to have this problem where society will be will appear as a cave. It will appear as a matrix. It will appear as a system of infrastructure that's placed over your head. And you'll be sitting there and you'll have these strange archons in the back dangling their puppet strings, dangling their carrots over you and bewitching you by pushing narratives into your head. And usually, oftentimes, they'll be trying to do something quite negative to you. They'll be trying to explain to you how reality works. They'll be trying to influence your decisions and make you do the things that they want you to do, because this is just in their self-interest to do something like this. And of course, there will be some of us, the Morpheuses, the Neos, the people who wake up to this, who will step outside the matrix, see it for what it is, and start to ask some very serious questions. These will be the people who enter into reality and see the world as it is truly manifest. And this is very important, because when you step into reality, you begin to notice how pernicious the Matrix can be. You begin to develop this way that you can objectively judge the quality of the Matrix. And an awful lot of people would try to describe this as maybe something moral. You know, they'll say that it's a moral question, that people who are controlling the Matrix are evil or wrong or something like this. But I think it's more straightforward than that. I think what's going on in the Matrix is that you have a set of people, you have a set of Brahmins, and you can look at how the people living inside of it are living. You can look at how the peasants are experiencing life. Are the peasants in a state of joy and happiness? Are the peasants living lives full of vitality, full of lust, full of fertility? Or are the peasants sterile? Are the peasants getting exploited and oppressed? Are the peasants getting their wealth extracted from them? Are they being bullied and pushed around by weird priests, by exploitative bankers or something like this? This is really your question. Because what you see nowadays is the manifestation of a culture with bad priests, with people who are definitely leading people towards malhealth. This could be from their own blunders, maybe they have malicious intent, but what you see manifest in modern Western man, and this is now as a consequence spreading all over the world, is disease, is decadence, is the golem man, the last man, the chubby tubby man, the man who's bent over full of inflammation, his eyes fester, he's stuffing his face with pizza and McDonald's, he's overweight, he's sloppy, he's pathetic, he's a wimp, he's cowardly, he's never initiated himself into life, he's never done anything brave before, he's addicted to porn, he's porn fucked, he's an incel, but he's addicted to porn. He's neurotic, stuck in his head. He's been reading books his whole life, stuck in this sort of conceptual reality, smashing away on Reddit. He's resentful and full of these highly tense and animated emotions of rage and anger and this depression and this fury inside of him that he can't direct anywhere. He wants to direct it somewhere. He's completely wage cooked, so he's not free at all. And he's exploited fiscally and financially by these people in power who are extracting all his life force and all his labor out and giving him nothing in return except for allowing him to live in a box apartment. And all this resentment towards this situation and all this inflammation and all this bad feeling is harvested up and directed towards moral crusades. It's directed towards these big, beautiful ideas, these big, joyous ideas of, like, you know, defeating some evil dictator, or flying out to the Middle East and bombing the brown people, or going in and changing the way, like, you know, saving the animals and getting us to all eat vegan food or something like this, or revolutionizing the way that society works by getting rid of, you know, taking Western people out of power in their own nations and all this type of stuff, and de-pedestalizing them and flipping over the contrast of everything. And these are all extremely charged political, neurotic decisions that people obsess about. They go on Reddit and they talk about them all day, and they have all this mass energy that they put back into the Matrix to encourage people to go certain directions and whatnot, because these moral choices are the way that they can express their passions, express their instincts. And these people are completely dominated and controlled by this Matrix, by the tendrils of this strange narrative producing archons, this narrative producing caste that are ruling this. And what an awful lot of us are doing is we are waking up to this. Many of these stories and narratives have been fed to us our whole lives, and many of us are getting red-pilled. We're seeing that not all is as it seems. We see that if we follow many of these stories, we don't live lives that are healthy and good. We don't live lives that are happy. We end up unhealthy. We end up inflamed and diseased, depressed. People start pushing drugs like SSRIs upon us. Our relationships don't work. We try to run these relationships of equality instead of standing in our gender roles, and we don't really fit with each other, and we don't click and all this type of stuff, and relationships fall apart. We have all sorts of issues where we notice that many of the political narratives going on seem absolute nonsense. People get seriously red-pilled by the fact that they get locked in their houses for extended periods of time. People notice that education is not educating them, but instead sort of brainwashing them and leaving them disempowered. They notice they're getting financially exploited at every turn and all these type of things. And so people began to step away from that. People began to step outside of that stuff and try to discover reality for themselves. And this is what getting red-pilled is. It's like, what does it mean to be a man? How does it mean to be a man to relate to a woman? This is the basic red pill a lot of people are going through right now. How do you actually set that up with male-female polarity? What would that mean? How do we step into reality and discover this stuff instead of listening to all these delusional narratives that are going on here? What does it mean to be healthy? How do we develop energy and health inside of myself? I don't want to be depressed. I don't want to take a fuckload of drugs for the rest of my life. How can I generate health and power and resilience within myself? What does it mean to be creative and fertile? What does it mean to work? Why do I have to work and get all of my wealth harvested off me and given to these people who are exploiting me? Why are these people in control of my nations and telling me all these insane things that they're going to end my history, that I am the evil one responsible for all terrible things in society, and I want to overturn the nature of my society and completely change its transition and reform it in the way that they see fit? Why are these people saying stuff like they're going to, you know, make us eat bugs and all this type of stuff? I don't want any of that stuff. I want to be healthy. I want to be vital. This is not evil. There's nothing wrong with this. I want to share my health with strong relationships around me. I want to be someone who is creative. I want to be someone who is fertile. I want to be someone who is promoting the good life. I want to be someone who's bringing healing and health and vitality to other people. Why are these people so mad at me for wanting this stuff? Why do these people not want me to have this stuff? They might be malicious, as I said. They might be dumb. It's probably a combination of both. But we're noticing that stuff. And this is something that really opens your eyes, is that your instincts want you to be in reality. They want you to break free from the matrix, and they want you to seek a life of vitality and health. They want you to cast away from all that stuff and go towards something that is life-giving. And this is where we come to Nietzsche. This is Nietzsche's big idea. If you clearly understand Nietzsche, you clearly understand this. He was saying that our problem is that we don't have a clear way of looking at the world that is focused entirely on health and vitality instead of moral crusades and all this other strange stuff that actually leads us to disease. Nietzsche has a shocking statement where he says that morality is anti-life. And we as humans think ourselves as moral. Western man sees himself as moral. And we say to ourselves, our whole society is built on morality. We wouldn't have society without morality. And to say something like morality is anti-life is very, very extreme. And one of the biggest narratives, one of the biggest sources of all of our narratives, is our morality. This is what gives Western man his comprehension of himself. He has this group of people, and this is what I mean, that they might actually just be stupid. It might not be as malicious as we think. I'm sure there's a little bit of exploitation and greed going on, and some people, bad actors and, you know, sickos and up there like Epstein and all that stuff. But there's also an aspect of what's going on with these experts, these people at the top of the Platonic pyramid, the wrong people, in that they're sort of blunderous, you know. They're a bit dumb, they're a bit dolt, they don't quite know exactly what they're doing. And an awful lot of their choices are leading to the cascading fall of Western civilization that we see going on. And part of that is the arrogance that Western man has in his moral supremacy of the world. You see this so much in people. Morality is the thing that leads us in so many choices that we have. We have all these crusades. You know, Western man is saying that we're going to save Ukraine. And look at him now. He's like freaking out. Everybody's freaking out because things like the energy crisis and all this type of stuff. They're saying, oh God, the energy bills are going up. We're all broke. Everybody's shutting down their houses and all this type of stuff. Western man is sterilizing himself because he's saying the world is too full. It's overpopulated, and we're destroying the environment, and we are this evil disease that is on the earth. And so what we're going to do is sacrifice ourselves and empower the environment by stop having children. And we're going to stop eating meat. We're going to stop participating in the natural cycle of life and death, where life eats life, and we're going to stop killing animals because it's evil. Maybe you might even say because of cholesterol, but there's also a huge part of it where it's just because it's bad, it's evil, it's cruel, it's crooked. And we're going to start eating vegetables. And of course, this leads to lower health. It kind of ruins your health and stuff like this. And there's all these issues that come along with this stuff. There's all sorts of crusades where it's like, oh, well, Western culture was, you know, it's ambitious, conquering Martian energy, the natural life force that drove us to take over the entire world and colonize the entire world. That's evil. That was bad. That was wrong. And so what we have to do is we have to sacrifice our society, sacrifice all our progress, sacrifice our self-identity, our confidence in ourselves, sacrifice our beliefs in ourselves, and instead harvest in and transform all of society to make up for that as a sort of an apology, destroy all the progress we make and take away this high ideal that we have of advancement and progress and expansion and creativity, the pursuit of the truth and pursuit of science. And instead, we're going to flip that on its head and pursue a moral ideology, the morality of diversity or the morality of egalitarianism, all these ideological views that go against those expansive instincts, that expansive life force that was inside of people. And what this leaves Western man into becoming is somebody who is soft, who is fat, who is sterile. He has no kids. He has no future. You talk to most Western people and they don't even expect to be on Earth. They're like, oh, I'm not going to have any ancestors. My ancestors are going to die out. And that's a good thing because we don't need as many people anymore. I don't really mind if I'm fat and chubby and useless and incapable and all this type of stuff. I don't really care if I'm leaving a world that is not going to have any ambition or any expansive energy or any future. I'm happy to let go of this stuff. I don't care if I'm not going to have any kids. I'll get a vasectomy because it's the right thing to do. I don't care if I sacrifice my living standards and the future and all this type of stuff to ideological extremism, because that's what I'm all about. I don't care if I castrate the youth and trap them inside and reorganize society and put us in a precarious position where we genuinely might lose an awful lot of our freedoms if we just keep on allowing people to run crazy pharmaceutical scams and stuff like this. And all of this stuff, you look at it and you see actually the first principle underneath all of this stuff is sterility, is anti-life, is heartlessness, is not wanting to live. This is pure, unadulterated nihilism. This is manifesting a person who is in a death cult. This is fundamentally anti-creativity, life, health, freedom, expansion, joy, crusading, whatever you want to say. Everything that life does, everything that nature empowers inside of us, nature makes us grow, makes us expand, makes us create, wants us to have vitality and health, wants us to fuck, wants us to get dirty and sweaty and bang each other so that we produce children. Nature wants us to create things and produce creativity and manifest our reality in the world. Nature wants us to spread our culture and spread ourselves out into the world. But of course, we don't want any of those things. Morality, these conceptions, these crusades inside of our heads, these stories are castrating us. They are leading us, driving straight into the ground, pulling down this entire civilizational project that we have gone forward with and pulling it down with us, destroying absolutely everything. And there's a very serious question that we ask, because I'm sitting here like all the rest of us and I'm saying, what the fuck is going on? Like, why is this happening? Because I don't feel like this. I woke up from the Matrix many years ago. I have to thank Nietzsche for that. And I was saying to myself, I don't want to be a part of this decadent culture. I didn't have the language for it. I didn't understand what it meant. But I became sort of resistant to an awful lot of the narratives and the brainwashing. And for that reason, I've made an awful lot of choices that have empowered me. And I meet people now who never woke up from the programming, never could see past this type of stuff. And they're now in the position where they're broke, they're trapped in their countries and they're getting their currency inflated. They can't afford to pay their electricity. Their food is getting more poisonous. They were forced to do procedures that they didn't want to do. And all these terrible things are happening to them. And they're in this position of sterility. They're in this position of compression. They're in this position of they feel enslaved. They feel like they're getting exploited and oppressed. And it comes to them following along with these stories and waking up too late, not seeing what's going on. And instead, you've been able to wake up for this and step out of the Platonic cave and stand. This is sort of what Nietzsche's talking about. Not go and become a nihilist or become some fucking crazy edgy antichrist or something like that, but just stand outside and say to yourself, look at the real world. Look at nature, look at life, look at the wonders and dynamism and profoundness of life, and ask yourself something. What would it mean to produce vitality, to produce joy, to produce true happiness? What would it mean to serve life as it exists within me? You're given that flickering flame and that possibility that you can believe in yourself, you can engage in the world. What would it mean to be creative? What would it mean to find somebody beautiful and come inside of them and produce a child? I know it's naughty, I know these words are like, oh, that's so extreme, we can't think this way, but this is what life wants out of you. Life wants you to procreate. What life wants you to generate. Life wants you to seek for something higher. Life wants you to live. Life wants you to be concerned with the thirst and joy of life. What would it mean for you to go and push your culture onto the world, to dig into your unconscious, your deep imagination, do Jungianism properly, go into the schizophrenic unconscious that you have and pull out all your symbols and manifest this as high art and culture, manifest this as new forms, new buildings, new dreams, and push your your dreams out into the world and become creative and expand and establish your culture in the world. Tell new stories. Stop telling reruns of Lord of the Rings. Stop telling reruns of Marvel Comics. Instead, produce something new. Produce something Promethean. Produce something ascendant, going in a new direction. Give life a destiny. You have that feeling inside of you of that optimism of life, that belief that the world is going somewhere, the belief that there's this inevitable and infinite possibility, which is the feeling that life possesses. Life always finds a way, and when you are full and impassioned by life, you're not dejected and cynical and depressed about the fall of the West. You're not lost and stuck as this resentful leftist who's giving out about the West. You're not a right-winger conservative who's saying, like, I wish I could just run away into the forest or something like that. You're not some type of schizophrenic libtard screaming about the nature of the world, demanding that we, like, destroy all of society to satisfy the resentment and the moral schizophrenia inside of your soul. Instead, when you break free from all that type of stuff and you wake up and you find the life force inside of yourself, it carries you towards things that make you believe. You want to participate in the world. You want to participate in history. You see the possibilities of the future. You launch yourself upon this stuff. You say to yourself, how can I get involved? How can I produce? How can I create? How can I be a part of it? How can I manifest something that's affirmative? How can I engage with the joy of life? It's infinite capacity to produce stuff. And you become hard. You become serious. I want to play the game. I want to produce. And this is the thing, is that regardless of if this is some type of evil, malicious plot, it's some type of resentment, the resentment of some type of, you know, foreign elite or devious elite or people living on Mars or whatever the fuck we're saying it is now, or if it's just pure dumminess, it's pure just dumb bullshit or whatnot. The key thing that you see is that with all these people who are in this position of power at the top of the Platonic pyramid, what type of society are they manifesting? What are they creating? These people who are deciding what we sense or deciding what categories of the mind are. How is it affecting the way that you live? How is it affecting the manifest reality of what's going on? And it's making people sick. They might simply be a lot of sick people. They might be an awful lot of people who are decadent, sickly. They are nihilists. They don't believe in life. This is their Satanism. You know, they're sterile. They're freaks. They're damaged. They're decrepit. They're a load of golems. And the culture that they produce and they push upon people is horrific. It's the sickly high priest, the weird, creepy high priests that leads to the many becoming sick. They're abusing the people, and this is not good. And you don't have to stand for that stuff. You can take the red pill and say to yourself, look, all this complicated ideological, political stuff, look, you can get into that if you want, but in the simplest level possible, stand for your health, stand for nature, stand for life, demand that the world around you has to be more beautiful than the way that people are driving it from. Demand that the architecture is more beautiful. That stuff is good, but become creative yourself. Push yourself towards these absolute ends. Become red-pilled and do everything in your possible power to make sure that you become a source of life out of yourself. Push against these trends. Push against this stuff. Demand that the people who get ascendant in the culture, the people who get chosen, are those who are promoting life, who are promoting vitality, are promoting health, promoting creativity, promoting these type of forces, because this is the good. This is what you're looking for. These type of people need to ascertain ascendancy over the current archons that are running the game, because these people are making you sick. Whoever they might be, it doesn't matter who they might be, this is what you must culturally demand. You must say to yourself, this is the standard that I hold myself to, and this is the standard that I'll hold the world to, and fight tooth and nail to have this, because this is what life would do. This is what life does out in nature. It fights tooth and nail for health and space and the realm and the possibility of it being creative and producing its own forms. That's what life does in its simplest level. And that screams inside of you louder than anything, louder than any ideology, louder than any other thing, louder than even your depression and your cynicism, your fear about the nature of the world. That's always going to be screaming there. And when that dies in you, you are done. That is over. And you must be able to connect with that. And you'll see in Western man that the transformation in Western culture that is coming, I can feel it in my body. I can feel it shuttling in through me, through my dreams. People are waking up to this stuff. These moral crusades, this Western man as a sort of insane, resentful crusader, that was something from last century. That is over. That is something Nietzsche diagnosed and said, that's the result. That's what nihilism looks like. It looks like people trying to find meaning in these big causes, despite the fact that they are sick and in pain. And instead, this is all going to transform transformed. The wheel of revolution is turning and people's culture is transforming and something new is coming. And this is going to be something. This is going to be a culture. This is going to be a way of seeing the world, a worldview, a set of categories, a set of ideas, a set of beliefs, a set of stories that are believe in health, believe in ourselves, believe in who we are, believe in the manifestation of our creativity, and believe in creating a future that is full of vitality and health instead of something that is so freakish and scary as what you see being promised. Now, with all that said, the way your life unfolds itself right now is you are in a matrix. You will suffer if you remain within this matrix. If you allow these narratives to infect your mind, you will be in pain. You will be depressed. You will form all sorts of weird addictions. If you allow yourself to get subsumed by the normies, by the herd, you will be falling down into their deadened consciousness. If you want to do something great, say you want to create new culture and go beyond yourself, you're going to have to break out of that. If you even want to live a life of joy and happiness, health, success, you're going to have to break free from the thinking of the masses. The masses are dumb, petty, and stupid. They don't see this stuff going on. They are ruled. They are ruled by people in the shadows. And you have to break free from that type of stuff. Now, I felt this in my gut very early on. I broke out of the matrix. I realized when I was in college that I was actually getting brainwashed. I remember seeing it instinctively real time. I was having these books like Critical Theory, Marxism, getting shoved in my face. And I read them and I rejected them in my gut. I was like, there's something wrong with this. This is information getting pushed into my head. But I am not getting turned into somebody capable. I'm not getting transformed into somebody who has skills. I'm being turned into that sort of neurotic person that I see all the time in the West now. And what I did is I dropped out and I went and I discarded book cope and I went and I searched for skills. I searched for skill acquisition. I searched for people who could teach me how to speak, how to articulate myself. I broke out of the well-beaten path and I went and I sorted out my own education. I went and I found lawyers. I went and I found public speakers. I went and found all sorts of people who could teach me. I went and I found musicians. I went and I found opera singers. I went to fighting gyms and stuff like this. And I learned skills. I learned people to teach me how to manifest my capacity to present the logos to the world. I learned how to think for myself. I learned all the variety of tools that I would need in order to impose my creative imagination upon the world. And that was the making of me. That was something that absolutely transformed and saved my life. And so many people I meet nowadays who are jaded, who are cynical, they're like, the worst is falling, they're so sad about this stuff, they're worried about the normies not being red-pilled and all this type of stuff. These people don't have skills. You need skills. Skills give you competence. Competence gives you power. And being a skilled and competent power who has tested these skills in reality, that's how you break free. That's how you become someone who is capable of manifesting freedom, creating wealth for yourself, becoming charismatic, being able to get people on your side, being able to persuade people, being able to create stories that penetrate into the minds of the many, being able to create stories that lay the foundation for good relationships and whatnot. And so your biggest priority should be on becoming competent, becoming somebody worthy of being free, somebody jumps out into reality and develops the capacities necessary in order to succeed there. Your situation is just like that scene in Fight Club where Brad Pitt is holding the gun to the back of the guy's head outside the convenience store and he's saying, why are you not achieving your dreams? Why are you not free? Why have you not achieved everything that you're looking for? And the guy said that he needs more school. It's too much school. He needs more schooling. He needs to be better. He needs to go all in and he needs skills. And I felt that deep down and I said to myself, I'm going to break out. I'm going to go my own path. I'm going to go and I'm going to learn how to speak. I knew that you needed to be able to speak. I knew Julius Caesar set himself free from being able to speak. I knew that you needed to be able to get the most out of your mind, how to write, how to think, how to speak, how to apply psychology to your life and all this type of stuff. I spent a long time honing all those skills. I spent a long time honing my health, getting true energy bursting out of my body. I spent all this time doing all these type of things. And I've learned an awful lot from it and it's turned me into the man that I am. Now, of course, I want to gather together. I'm constantly talking about the Boyo Network. I want to gather together a crew of people who are well-constituted, savage individuals who are operating at the highest level. Now, I also understand that an awful lot of people aren't at that level. They've got flaws. They might be, for example, maybe very healthy, but they don't understand business or psychology or skills. They can't speak very well. You might get some people who maybe have got the business thing locked down, but they don't present themselves that well. They might get a nice job, but they don't speak that well. They don't articulate themselves that well. They're not the full package. They don't quite fit in yet, and so they want to get developed as well. I've a huge variety of different things that I can teach. Getting your energy levels as high as possible so you think clearly. Teaching you how to apply psychology if you run a business or something like this. Teaching you how to just develop your capacity to articulate yourself and speak and present yourself to the world better, so you start getting people to make decisions in your favor. I've done very well off this. I've made myself, you know, I've got myself a comfortable income off this, and I'm working with people who are pretty high levels in many different companies. I work with YouTubers doing millions of views and teaching them how to storytell. I've worked with people who are executives of massive multinational companies who are running these huge projects and training them how to go into negotiations and operate and do sales and stuff like this. I've worked with people who are struggling with their just basic mental health and getting themselves out of a depression and turning themselves into somebody who is energetic and free from the matrix. I've done all this stuff. I have these skills. I've figured out all these capacities. And it's an awful lot to rant and talk about, you know, and I don't spend too much time hammering you with, like, you know, selling courses or something like that. It is something I do. I can train people, and I leave it to the end of all these videos so that it's not annoying and I can keep the content up front. I can keep talking about Nietzsche and Plato and all that stuff up front. But if you are interested, if you want me to train you, if you want to get developed, if you want your capacities manifest to a higher level, what I'm going to do is I'm going to get you to go down below, and I'll send you a couple of emails with videos in them that explain many of the big primary things that I can do. Speaking skills, sales, negotiation, energy, all these type of things, talking about some of the things that I'm up to, so I can kind of give you an explanation. I'll also get somebody to call you if you want, of course. You can sort of be like, fuck off, I'm not interested, or something like that, but I'll sort that out as well, so you can actually chat with someone and you can see where we fit in. You might be someone who's, like, you know, fully manifest, full individual, individuated to the max, and all that you will want is just to join a crew of people who are thinking on the same wavelength, and maybe we can become artists together and create culture or something like that. But if you're at that point, or maybe you want to develop yourself in some sense, you want to develop more capacities, you want to develop more skills, and you want to see what I've got and how I could train that, I will explain all that stuff, as I said, down below. So there'll be links down below. You can go in, all this stuff, you know, you just click it, it's going to be sent for free, and then I'll have somebody call you and see what's going on and see what your situation is like, and I'll talk to you on the other end, okay? So thank you very much for listening. Pop down below, give that link a click, check out all this stuff, type of stuff. I have so many things I want to chat about, and it will be an awful lot more education focused, discussing all these type of things. So if you want that stuff sent to you, as I said, pop down there for free, get all that stuff. It'll be loads of comprehensive videos that'll be a bit more targeted and actual skill acquisition. See, people on YouTube find this stuff boring. I hate to break it to you, but this is the way that the world works. They'd rather just hear ranting and pictures and all this type of stuff. So if you want that stuff, if you want to go that level deeper, it's all down there. Thank you very much for listening. Watch out for the matrix. People are trying to tell you stories that'll make you eat canola oil. Do not do it. See you later, people. Bye bye.